behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are joined, of course, by our super producer today, Noel Pump Your Brakes Brown.
Noel Ignition Fire Brown.
Yeah, I've been... That's a good one. I've been thinking of the phrase, pump your brakes. And, you know, sometimes I will go through these phases, ladies and gentlemen, where I obsessively or continually overuse a phrase.
Like cool your jets.
Cool your jets.
Mm-hmm.
Pump your brakes is... something that really gets to strangers if you say it. It seems kind of offensive. It's like calling someone you don't know bozo.
Yeah, it's like yelling at them, hey, three times. Like, hey, hey, hey.
It is.
So, yeah, yeah.
With that in mind, we're picking Ignition Fire or Pump Your Brakes as nicknames for Noel here because it's appropriate for today's episode.
It is. Yeah, we're going to be talking about some of the most terrifying vehicle manufacturing defects. So straight from the factory, these are the problems that are, pre-installed in your car right from the get-go.
Yeah, and we'd like to go ahead and point your attention to our earlier episode on how car recalls work. That has a lot of information that's more large scale, I guess, some of the calculations that car manufacturers undergo when they are assessing a defect or whether to make a recall.
Yeah, and if you want to take a second look at anything that we're going to talk about today, we're following along with one of the articles from our site, from HowStuffWorks.com, and it is called 10 Most Terrifying Vehicle Manufacturing Defects, rather. And we're going to just kind of go through this list from 10 to 1. And I don't know if they necessarily go by how scary they are, because there are some really scary ones all along throughout here. I mean, there's some that are not so scary.
Right.
They just have huge numbers. But we're going to stick with the scary ones, I think, today. So just for an example, Ben.
Sure.
Right here in the intro of this article, it says that, you know, here's an example of a defect that's not so scary. In 1972, there was a recall of 3.7 million vehicles from Volkswagen that were built between 1949 and 1969. And the reason that they were brought back, all 3.7 million of them, was because they had loose windshield wipers. So, see, that's not very scary, right?
No.
Loose windshield wipers. It's an annoyance.
Well, how heavy are the wipers?
I'm
just kidding.
I guess they could come flinging off of there at a high rate of speed. No, they're just loose. And so you'd bring it back in and tighten it up, no problem. But then skip forward to 2014, where General Motors had an ignition switch recall that gets a lot more press because it affected slightly fewer vehicles at 2.6 million. But they believe that recall or that faulty product was the cause of 13 deaths. So significant difference in the severity of this whole thing, right? You get the point. And that's the kind of recall that we're going to be talking about today, are the ones that had the potential to cause some harm if they didn't.
Well, let's go into number 10. This is something that Scott and I are both familiar with because this occurred in the lifetime of our show.
Yeah, at the very beginning, right?
Yeah, back when we were high-speed stuff.
I think it was happening right when we started this podcast. So you may catch some early mention of this early on. I think we kind of stayed away from it.
We did.
We had a sponsorship going on there that didn't look too well. They didn't want us to talk about it all that much.
It wasn't directly with us either.
No, it wasn't. So anyways, let's talk about this. So
all right.
This is going back to, when was it? Right around 2008, 2009.
Uh-huh.
And maybe even a little bit earlier than that, because the problem was, here's the problem. Toyota was known as a very reliable vehicle. It has been known as that all along, and it still is, really.
Yeah, and they do great work in safety, and usually when you hop in a Toyota, you know that it will accelerate only when you intend it to.
Yeah, and so we started getting these reports, and I'm sure a lot of people can remember this, these reports of unintended acceleration happening and people calling while they're on the freeway and they can't stop. And there was kind of like a panic going on. If you had one of these cars, you were afraid to drive it. You just didn't want anything to do with this because it sounds terrifying. It is terrifying.
Right.
It caused 31 deaths. 31. And this was the claim that these cars would not stop accelerating once they start going.
And Toyota didn't really help itself in some of these situations because first they said that it was user error,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Yeah.
Then the numbers kept adding up and they said, well, it's a it's a faulty floor mat.
Oh, yeah. They said that the floor mat was interfering with the accelerator pedal.
Uh-huh.
And that was what they recalled. So they would bring it back in. They would fix the floor mats in 2009. And that was supposed to be the solution. And they thought that was it. But then it just continued to happen.
So in 2010, they finally issued a recall for a sticky pedal mechanism.
Yeah, so 9 million cars in total were recalled for this, and it didn't quite go away there because in 2014, Toyota had to pay a $1.2 billion settlement for misleading investigators in that whole situation. So it cost them big in the end. It cost some people their lives as well.
Yeah.
And it was also, man, how bad is that for your reputation, too? I mean, just awful. It's one of those things where people still talk about it. People still remember it. We're talking about it now.
Right.
But, you know, honestly, the most of their product is still solid. It still works right.
Oh, yeah.
And they fixed the problem. It's just how long does it take? I mean, you can point fingers at it. You know what? Let's not even go down that path. Let's just let's go to the next one.
I just want to say that they still weren't as bad as Comcast, which remains the number one least popular company in this country.
I think you're right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. All right.
So just so you guys know, it's not going to get Comcast bad. Can I say that on the air?
I guess so. Sure. Yeah. A little personal vendetta, maybe. Something going on there. All right. So let's move on to number nine, Firestone.
Yes.
Here's another one that's very recent history, and I bet a lot of people remember this, but in the 1990s, of course, SUVs were huge. They still are kind of huge. I mean, more crossovers now, but SUVs were really kind of at their height of popularity at this point in the 90s. And one of the most popular vehicles that Ford had was the Explorer at the time.
Yeah, great vehicle.
Full-size Explorer, big vehicle, really good. Yeah, a lot of people that I knew had them. And the problem was, they paired up with tire manufacturer Firestone, which is nothing new in Ford's history or anything,
right.
But they paired up with them on a specific type of tire, and you know, of course, it's a truck tire, a light-duty truck tire, pretty big.
Yeah.
The problem was that the tread would separate from the steel belts.
And this means that the tire will blow. So as we point out in the article, a lot of the drivers in SUVs in the 90s, and maybe, I'm going to say it, even today, have these vehicles, but they use them just as their daily driver.
Yeah,
they're not going off-road.
They don't even get on gravel, practically.
Right.
I mean, it's always on pavement, and, you know, you encounter a pothole or something, and that's about the most, or, you know, a speed bump.
And you know what's really obnoxious? When they slow down at the speed bumps.
I know that grinds your gears, doesn't it? That
used to grind my gears so much, man. Remember when our office was next to those malls, those big, really fancy malls?
Yeah.
And I would come back just steamed. I was ticked off, man.
I don't see it that way. I don't see it that it doesn't matter how big the truck is. It seems like they should still take the speed bump slow. I mean, that's the intended purpose.
Well, they should slow down, yeah. But you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I can see you're formulating something over there.
No.
Yeah, you want to yell. You want to yell.
I'm going to take the loss on this one. It's just, I think it's, you know, it's like what we talked about with cars that were black sheep of their family. Like, if you get a vehicle for an intended purpose, of course it's your money and it's your car, but if I see somebody in a 4x4 slowing down as though they're driving gingerly scooting a Ferrari over something, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay, I kind of get that.
But, mainly Hummers. It was mainly Humvees.
Okay, I understand. But it seems like – it does seem that – the majority of off-roading is done at very, very low speeds, too. You crawl over things. You don't necessarily hit them at top speed.
But regardless of personal pet peeves and stuff, which, again, are entirely subjective, everyone who has a set of tires deserves for them not to blow up.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And the problem was, you're driving along there on the pavement, and the tire blows on you. Most of the drivers didn't have really any experience of what to do if a tire blows. I mean, it's something that until it happens to you, it's a foreign thing to you. You just don't know what to do, how to react. And here's the problem. A lot of the drivers were also in their first maybe tall vehicle. You know, not every driver, of course, but, you know, a lot of them were just kind of experiencing this at that height, that ride height, for the first time. So it's a little bit jarring when that happens, and they would overcorrect, spin the wheel. You know, in the overcorrection, the vehicle would flip over. And so here's the problem. Like, it was like, you know, the tire manufacturer was blaming Ford, and they were blaming the owners because they were overreacting, didn't know how to handle the situation. It was just this back and forth between who's at fault for all three of those. And eventually it kind of came out in the wash that, yeah, it was a faulty tire that was the problem. It wasn't necessarily that that it was a problem with the Ford Explorer design or anything like that. It wasn't a problem. And I guess it is, you know, driver fault that they didn't know how to correct the situation when it happened. But
again, man, you can't expect people to, in an ideal world, everyone would know the correct maneuvers. But people are not expecting to have explosive tires.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, is that like an invasive move? That's not an invasive move. That's more of a defensive driving situation,
yeah, that's
I guess.
A recovery
that's something
move.
That you would learn. Yeah, recovery move. You would learn that in, like, maybe an advanced driving school of some kind, you know, like how to handle that kind of situation. You don't learn that in driver's ed
in
for sure.
In basic driver's ed,
no,
yeah.
You don't, although you should. You really should.
How to
steer out of a skid, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do get how to correct a swerve without overcorrecting, or a skid, as you said.
But this is a big deal. I mean, this the flip over resulted in 200 deaths, over 200 deaths.
Yeah, and 6.5 million Firestone tires were recalled, but Ford also offered to replace an additional 13 million.
13 million tires they had to replace. Crazy. But that's in addition to the 6.5 million that Firestone brought back. Oh, man, that's a lot of tires. All right, so you know what? How about this? Before we go on to our next one, let's stop for a word from our sponsor. All right, and we're back, and we're on number 8 of our list, Ben.
So Ford had a
string of bad luck, really.
A string of bad luck. That's a way to put it. So you're familiar with the Lincoln Navigator, right?
Oh yeah.
The Lincoln Navigator, which I know is divisive at times amongst both fans of Lincoln and fans of SUVs, is the most recalled of all Ford vehicles.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I never would have guessed that.
Due to their cruise control conflagration.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that's what this one's about. It's about the fires. And this is a big deal. Between 1991 and 2004, a total of 14.9 million vehicles, that cruise control switch would short out and catch fire. And the thing was, crazy thing is, you didn't really have to be, you know, you might say, well, I don't use cruise control.
Right.
It wouldn't have affected me. You didn't have to be doing that. They would just short out on its own and catch fire. So you could just be driving along doing whatever it is you do, no cruise control activated, suddenly there's a fire in your vehicle.
And Ford, to be clear, this is another component that Ford did not build. These were actually built by Texas Instruments. Yes, that Texas Instruments.
Yep.
The folks who have had the same calculator that everyone uses at some point in middle or high school.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember those.
Did you have one of those?
I likely did, yeah. I mean, I had calculators when I was that age, you know, in grade school and high school.
I was scandalized by how expensive it was. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
So they manufactured this. This was the largest recall in history.
Oh, wow. Big one. Yeah, what do we say? Almost 15 million vehicles, right?
14.9. Yeah,
14.9,
yeah.
Huge. All right, so let's shift manufacturers here, Ben. We're going to go over to General Motors for a bit. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so General Motors had an issue with engine mounts at some point in their history, and it was a long time ago, actually. It's one of the earliest recalls, really, and it was a big one again, but the fix on this one is surprising. When you hear what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, the image that's used here in this article is of a 1968 Camaro SS. But we're talking about cars, a lot of different cars that had great big V8 engines. So understand that there's a lot of torque happening under the hood there, right? All right. So here's what happened. The engine mounts were bad. They were just simply bad. They would break. And, you know, that's bad enough, right? But the under the hood, the engine would twist when you're trying to accelerate. And then it would also, like, it would sometimes accelerate when you didn't want it to accelerate because all the linkages were being pulled and twisted. And in addition to that, if it's accelerating when it's not supposed to be, that throws everything else off, and sometimes it would disable the brake assist.
Right. So here's the strange fix they had, and I kind of like this. This is a MacGyver thing. I like the ingenuity of it.
Yeah.
But
it's just how they did things back then.
It's kind of jerry-rigging
stuff.
Yeah,
I'll say.
So let's say you took your 68 Camaro SS or whatever into the dealership. The mechanic wouldn't actually replace the mounts. They would just anchor the engine to the firewall so that when the mounts screwed up, the engine wouldn't twist around.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible.
But The price was very reasonable.
What was the price?
$30.
A $30 fix for something this huge. I mean, that could cause a lot of damage. Now, imagine that. You're driving down the road and your car is accelerating when it's not supposed to be, and the brake assist goes out. So you got a pretty heavy vehicle. You're trying to stop with manual brakes, probably drum brakes, if I had to guess, in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Not every case, of course. You know, some had disc. But
in a lot.
In a lot of cases, they were drum brake. Anyways, difficult situation.
Let's continue with this hall of infamy, my friend. Toyota's unintended acceleration was definitely an issue. However, it was not the first time something like this occurred.
No, for those of you that remember the 1980s, the Audi 5000 was maybe one of the first ones that you heard about having this situation. And I'm sure that it happened in the past. Now, a lot of here's what would happen. The driver would shift out of park and try to ease out of the driveway or into a parking space, or maybe into the garage or whatever. And what would happen is the car would just kind of, unintended acceleration. It would just take off on its own. It was almost like it had a life of its own. It would lurch forward. Mm-hmm. So I think they at first denied that anything was going on, and they said that, you know, well, maybe it's the pedals are too close together, or the owners are putting their foot on two different pedals at one time. And there were a lot of back and forth about this. And, of course, the owners were saying, no, I did it right. There's something here. It was lurching forward. It did it on its own. It took them a while to get this one kind of meshed out, like exactly what happened or hammered out.
Right.
Audi recalled the cars three times in 1982, 83, and then again in 1987. And finally, they got it right, but the problem was Audi said, you know what, we're done.
Yeah, I was like, did they definitely get it right, or did they get so sour on the problem that they quit? Because they stopped selling it in 88. Selling the car in the U.S.
In the U.S. Now, that's the Audi 5000 model in the United States in 1988 was no more. I wonder if this problem persisted overseas. I wonder if it continued, or if it truly was something that was, you know, an issue with the thing. I mean, it's one of these things, like, you've heard about this, and there's so much back and forth, it's really tough to nail down exactly what was going on there. But I think they finally fessed up that there was something going, there was an issue.
Well, and also
a manufacturing issue.
Comparatively, it affected a few cars, you know, less than 400,000.
Yeah, 400,000. Well, that's
389,000. I'm just saying compared to millions and millions and millions.
Yeah, compared to Ford or the Navigator with their 15 million. Or right. Something like that. Yeah.
So let's move on to something else here. This one is one that I didn't see coming. I wasn't aware of this, but it's back with General Motors. So in the early 1970s, stones could get lodged between the steering assembly and the frame, and it would prevent the car from turning left.
Unbelievable. This would be another just terrifying one if you were on the road and this happened, right? So imagine just driving over a gravel road, and then you pull out onto the main road, you turn right to get on the road or whatever.
And try to correct it back.
Yeah, or the road kind of veers to the left a little bit, and you keep going straight right into the ditch. I mean, that's the kind of situation that could happen. Or I don't know what angle, you know, it held you back from going left or not, but, I guess it was a really easy thing for GM to fix. But it had to have been just terrifying. But the recall was done in 1973, and it was pretty big. It affected 3.7 million vehicles across their lineup. So a lot of different cars were involved. But man, that's a scary one. That's weird that that could ever even happen, or how they even figured out that was happening. I mean, that's something that just put yourself back in 1973 and imagine them trying to figure out what was going on there and how that happened.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty good that they were able to nail it down to just that, you know, this is the condition that causes it, and here's how we're going to fix it. Without being able to communicate with all the other dealerships quite as easy as they can now.
I want to set the scene for this next one because I like the way we get into it.
Okay.
Imagine you're in your house, in your bed, sleeping soundly, light snooze. Maybe you got one of those little noisemaker things on, mm-hmm. you know, rain sounds or something.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those,
Very peaceful time.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And you've got a Ford, because you're doing pretty well in life. Your vehicle's in your garage, and it's also just hanging out, just waiting for the wee hours to pass. Until, that is, the ignition in your car starts itself up, shorts out the electrical system, and melts the steering column.
That is some Christine stuff right there. That's scary.
Yeah. And that's scary. If you're lucky.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, it could be parked in your garage and burn your house down. That's one thing. That's terrifying. I mean, it could be, you know, just the car itself catches fire, or it could be parked in a parking lot somewhere, you know, if you park at work or something and come back out and you find your car, you know, a little flambé. Vehicle, yeah, a little carbecue. Yeah. What do they call it? Carbecue.
Yes, unfortunately, that is the word.
Yeah, I guess so. So, and this is a big one, too. So Ford put this exact ignition, the one that caught fire, in 7.9 million vehicles between 1988 and 1993. And then they didn't recall them until 1996. So there was an issue all that time. That's a long, long time. Crazy enough, though, no one died from this particular fault.
No, thank
this,
God. Right?
Yeah, from this defect, I guess, you know, this manufacturing defect.
But I mean, it's
very lucky.
Yeah, it's very, very – it's frankly, it's bucking statistics that no one passed away.
Absolutely,
And now we are – I was going to say without further ado, but with a bit of ado, we are going to discuss the top three most terrifying manufacturing defects. But first, a word from our sponsor.
All right, we're back, and here's another one about Ford and fire, which, man, it seems like the trend here towards the end.
And this is a recent one.
Yeah, it is. So this affects the 2013 Ford Escape. It had fuel lines that were cracking and spilling gasoline onto the engine, which I think everybody already knows this. I mean, you pour gasoline onto a hot engine, you know what's going to happen. It's
right.
Another fire. So,
yeah.
Again, these fuel lines that were cracking and failing, of course, led to just another huge mass of fires in another Ford product.
But luckily, there's one big advantage that comes out of this.
What's that?
We have a much more sophisticated and efficient vehicle recall system nowadays.
So it was what, happened faster?
Yeah, yeah. And only about 11,500 escapes had to be recalled. And the best news, no one was hurt.
Oh, that's really good. That's it's again, super fortunate with these last two situations, these last two fire situations, right? Because that kind of stuff is not something you want to mess around with. But again, 11,500 escapes? That's getting on top of things pretty quick. I commend Ford for doing that so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good work.
And now let's go to number two.
Yeah, back to GM again,
back
right?
To GM.
And another steering issue. All right, so here's the deal. In 1981, GM had to recall 5.8 million cars with the issue that we're about to tell you about. And so here's what happened. There'd be an out-of-control situation in General Motors cars, and it was caused by a suspension bolt that would come loose and disable the steering column.
Right, yeah, and the problem with that is it's no longer really an issue of traction at that point.
Yeah, you're just along for the ride at that point, right?
You just hope that it stops in a nice place
yeah,
and not
right.
A tree.
A nice soft spot.
Oncoming vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, so imagine yourself in this situation. You've got like a carload of people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're carrying a very heavy load or something, and suddenly you're completely out of control of the vehicle. I mean, you can stop it. You can accelerate, but why would you accelerate? But you
right.
don't. But you just cannot steer left or right either way. Nothing's happening. It's unresponsive. That's got to be terrifying. I mean, even stopping would be kind of terrifying because if you're in the wrong situation, what's behind you? What's coming up behind you?
Right. You're on the interstate
so
or something.
You know, let's say you do a panic stop or something. That's not always the best answer either. So sometimes you just had to ride this thing out, you know, maybe coast to where you thought you could pull over safely. I don't know. Would you even have enough time in that situation, Ben, if like just suddenly the steering was unresponsive? I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I guess it's case by case.
I mean, the first thing to do if the brakes are still working is to – because if your vehicle is unsteerable at that point, then it becomes a danger to everything around you. So if it's unsteerable and you're doing 70 or something,
yeah,
then you have to, I would say, you can't panic stop. That's the scary part. You just have to try to gradually slow down.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, once you do that, you're stuck in traffic maybe if you're, you know, on a road that's long and straight. Even if you're trying to push it over to the side, you would have a difficult time getting it off to the side of the road. I mean, this really leads to a huge, huge problem for motorists.
Yes.
Huge problem. And of course, 5.8 million vehicles were affected with this in 1981, so that's a big one for them. All right, the first one, the one on our list here, the last one, I guess we
should
say.
I wonder if people can guess this one,
Scott.
You know,
maybe. How about we give them 5 seconds to think about it?
I'll
still talk, but I'm giving you 5 seconds to think. What might be number one? And it kind of goes back to, the situation we talked about with Ford before. It is the Ford Pinto fires.
Yes, Ford's most famous fires. So one of the most famous recalls of all time from 1971 to 1975, the Ford Pinto and the Mercury Bobcat ended up being recalled in 1978 because the gas tank could rupture when there was a rear-end explosion.
Yeah. And so they nailed this down to the I think it was a bolt in the bumper or something like that that was right. causing the rupture to happen.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about this is that maybe the most crazy thing about this is that the attitude of the Ford execs at the time about this looking back on this, they went through all the numbers and they decided that it was cheaper to pay settlements to people who were already, you know, who were injured by this or killed by the defect than it was to redesign the fuel tank and to actually do a recall to replace it. Now, that's pretty scary.
It's a conspiracy.
It really is. It's scary to think about that. And so, you know, there's a lot of public outrage about this. And of course, books were written about it. There were a lot of fallout over this issue, right?
I mean,
Ford really took a hit as far as popularity went at the time. And, of course, the way people just generally saw, you know, well, the execs that made the decisions, of course. I mean, they were pointed out. They knew who it was. Yeah, it's just a bad news story all around for Ford, the Pinto story.
Right. And I think it's time for us to do a little bit of a retroactive disclaimer here, and that it is the following. Car manufacturers are by no means evil. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They do great, amazing things and have factions or people at the top during certain eras made horrible decisions. Yeah, clearly. We see several examples of that in this episode. But also, building a car, we talk about it sometimes, is such a tremendously complicated thing. If anything, it's almost surprising that there aren't more defects and recalls, and a lot of them are really minor things.
Yeah, the ones that you won't hear about, too, because, you know, there's something like 500 recalls every year in recent years. And
that's,
it could be very, very minor, like we said, but, you know, with the loose wipers, or it could be something that's major, like we got the airbag situation going on right now with Takata, right?
Yeah.
And the faulty airbags that are sending shrapnel into the cabin when they explode. That's terrible news.
Yeah.
So that's happening right now as we're talking, and more vehicles are being affected by that because that's a supplier that's using that product in many different product lines. So big situation there, but that's all happening right now. And then there's just all these other small ones that you don't really hear about. And I'm surprised that we don't hear about more, I guess.
Right.
A lot of people will get a flyer, you know, sent to their house that says, you know, bring it in. There have been three recalls. You know, we want to change the anchor bolts on your seatbelts, or we want to do something really, really minor like that. But it's important to us. We need to get it done.
Right. And also with the current current evolution of the recall system here in the U.S. with manufacturers, it's much better for the manufacturer to be proactive about it.
Oh, yeah. If they think there's a problem with something, they're going to have you come in. And, I didn't mean to downplay the anchor bolt and the seatbelt or anything like that. I mean,
right.
That's serious. But, there's some really, really minor things that, you know, are not safety driven that, you know, they just want to take care of because it's on their name's on that product and it's out there.
Right.
And they don't want it to be ashamed of it. They don't want it to be faulty. So, again, they take care of it up front and, you know, it's the right thing to do, really.
Absolutely.
And it's a smart move, really. I think on their part, it's a good PR move, you know?
Well, yes. It's not entirely altruism.
Well, that's true. I mean, it could lead to legal issues down the road that might
for
end up costing them. And, of course, I mean, there's still, whether you like to believe it or not, even with this minor stuff, there's still a lot of that number crunching going on like they were doing at Ford. Not so much necessarily with the – I think now they know better than to mess around with that when they're, injuries and deaths involved, and
right.
they know that it's going to happen. They don't do that anymore. But now it's more like, well, this recall, this fix of this, whatever piece we're going to talk about here, maybe the headrest on a car that's a little jiggly, a little loose or something, you know.
Yeah, something has to – some kind of number crunching still has to
occur. I would think so, yeah. But does it make sense for us to bring this back just for, you know, just to keep our name – you know, solid in the probably it is. But there is some back and forth with this formula,
right? But here's the other thing this makes me think of to end on a positive note. You know what we should do? We should do a podcast on the most dependable car. Like, what is the most reliable, dependable car? I wonder if we could find that. I can already, ladies and gentlemen, I could already hear some of you hopping on the keyboard to write in about the most dependable car.
Oh, the most dependable car in your history, I guess, maybe? That would be
That's a good one.
Well, yeah, that's good. Like the one that just gave you no problems at all, or the one that gave everybody no problems at all? Like, what's the – is yeah. there one? Is there one that never had a recall, never and we're talking about in the days of recalls, of course, you know, since right. the NHTSA has been around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm over-explaining this, Ben. Let's just have people write in with maybe the car that they had the least – problems with.
Yeah, most dependable.
And then maybe we'll do some investigating on our side and see if we can find if there's one that has, you know, few or no recalls maybe.
Not your favorite car necessarily, ladies and gentlemen. And I feel like we have to say that because most people's favorite cars just have a boatload of problems.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't matter. Know? Doesn't matter. It's worth it to them, right?
Yeah.
I've had cars like that I knew it was going to be trouble, but I still loved it.
I still miss my Monte Carlo, although it may be I could have been 10 minutes late to everything.
That car practically made you a mechanic, you know?
Oh, man. You know, I'm still I still want one of those first or second gen Monte Carlos.
Oh, yeah, the big ones.
I'm hooked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know they're not the best cars. Okay, everybody, I've read your email. I know it's not.
Yeah, that will not be the one that comes up with the least number of problems.
No, it will not, but hopefully you will let us know, and maybe we can bring some of those voices to the air so you can tell your fellow listeners or warn your fellow listeners. In the meantime, we are going to head out. If you'd like to learn more about the recall system in the U.S., the history and the present, and a little bit about the future, then check out our earlier audio episode. It is available at our website, carstuffshow.com, along with every single other audio episode we've ever done. Don't believe iTunes. They'll only give you, like, what, the first 300 or something?
Something like that.
But we have many more, and check them out. If you go to the really early ones, just we're still getting our sea legs.
Yeah, be kind.
Please be kind, yeah. And in the meantime, you can find Scott and I on Facebook and Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW. You can see some of the things that we encounter in our daily rifling through the world of all things automotive. And if you have an episode you would like us to cover in the future, you can write to us directly. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.